Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Vietnam Innovators. I'm your host, Hao Tran. Thank you for tuning in every single Tuesday morning and supporting the show. Without you, this would not be possible. Our guest today, JP, is the chairman of Kokok and also works at Berta over in Germany. He'll share more about that later. And Vuan Nguyen, he is the CEO of Kokok. The two of them are definitely powerhouses and their entire team in Vietnam for what they do. Search, web browser, general advertising. They've been around the market for a long time and they know a lot about the market. So we're very excited to have them here and share more about their insights. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. Let's just start with a little bit about JP and Vuan yourselves. Maybe JP, start with you. A little bit about your background, how you ended up being involved in Vietnam.
So I'm an engineer. I come from Belgium originally, so I'm not even German. Engineer in background, started with Web 1 very early on or even before that, and helped build one of the biggest group of digital companies in Germany.
Okay.
And after about 10 years of doing that, I decided that search and browsers were really interesting platforms, and they were really platforms, meaning that every application that you would do would rely on these things behaving a certain way for you. So I decided to try to build a new search engine in 2008, which is now Brave Search, for those who want to try it out. So I was obsessed with search and browsers, and one day got a call from the Bodak chairman of Asia saying, there's this really weird company in Vietnam that's trying to do crazy things like you do. Why don't you come and visit? And I did, and I fell in love, and we invested.
Okay, and this was a number of years ago.
2014, I think, was that meeting.
Okay.
And the official investment was in 2015, but not because we committed much before that, but it was a time needed to restructure some stuff. And
well, Berta's now a big part of the Kokok story, and
yes,
the company's evolved a lot since then. I'm sure we'll talk more about that in a bit. Vuan, you've been CEO of Kokok for a little bit, but yep, you've been with the company for a long time.
So actually, I'm French-Vietnamese. Mm. So I was born in France, also engineering background. Mm. And then I worked about 10 years in France, so IT, then banking, and then moved to Vietnam in 2012, so 10 years ago, and started in banking. I did two fintech startups, and then I joined Kokok, a bit by chance, actually. So that was 2019, a bit more than 3 years. I think, like JP said, it's a really interesting company doing something pretty unique, you know, in Vietnam and even in the world. So not that many companies competing against Google in that space, browser and search engine. So it's really interesting. And I guess I really love the company because, you know, it's really a Vietnamese company focusing on Vietnamese users. You know, if we do our job well, actually we can have a lot of impact.
Yeah, definitely.
Because we have millions of users.
Well, that's how success is measured, right? The impact on the people. So,
yeah. Yes.
Vuan, you know, you talk about by chance that you came across Kokok and, of course, joined them. I want to hear from you. Like, why did you join Kokok? I mean, of your experience, you know, you can touch a lot of different industries, a lot of companies. Why Kokok for you?
No, so I think by chance because basically after the two fintech startups that I did that were like foreign startups, I mean, foreign investors, I was taking a break, actually. And then I met, you know, one of the Kokok top manager and her kids also going to the French school, like my kids, and just like play dates.
Okay.
And then we met and said, hey, I'm work for Kokok. there is this Belgium / German guy who is our CEO. You should talk to him. Mm. And that's what I did. And it happened.
Very small world here in Vietnam.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Exactly. Well, let's take a look back at the 12-year history, right, of the company. It started kind of out of nowhere. Maybe you can share more. Out of nowhere is one way to put it.
Exactly.
Why did the company start 12 years ago, and how is it different from today?
So the story starts in Russia, because one thing you have to remember at that time is that Google was big, but it was really big and focused on Europe and the US. And so there were a large part of the world where Google was present, but not paying attention. And Russia was very prominently so, and Yandex was the big leader. And there was this group of guys who decided to create a competitor to Yandex. Mm-hmm. And at one point, that became hopeless because Google entered the Russian market.
Mm. And you had Yandex already, too.
And you had Yandex already, so you would be number three. And, you know, it's hard enough to be number two. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't want to be number three. And in that group of people, there were three Vietnamese engineers. They had the idea of just replaying the playbook in Vietnam, in their home country, and convinced the two or three or four Russians, including the CEO of that company, to join them in that adventure.
Amazing.
And so they came to Vietnam and started to build a search engine. And obviously, I mean, one of the guys was a guy called Misha Kostin, who was in Russia considered to be the best search engine guy. Like, they used to have competitions as to who could build the best search engine, and he was consistently winning. And he was in that team, and he came to Vietnam. And guess what? He's still running Kokok Search today. So these three guys, plus the Russians, basically replayed the playbook in Vietnam, where Google was not paying attention at all. After a while, they realized, and this is something we'll probably talk a little bit later, is Google is very dominating in the distribution of its search engine via browsers, right? Mm-hmm. So they pay Safari insane amount of money, they pay Samsung, they pay everyone. And so they realized they needed to build a browser to distribute their search engine. Mm-hmm. Their first love was search, but you know, you need the browser as a kind of vehicle for search. And the browser took off because they were paying more attention to the Vietnamese users than the rest. So, you know, the browser would accentuate your typing, and it would correct your spelling mistakes. It would unblock Facebook, which was a big thing at that time. So they were paying attention, like we do today as well, to the specific needs of the local people, and got super successful at it. So it didn't start out of nowhere. It started from this idea that you can be the Google of a country, but it was in Russia. And then when it got unsuccessful, they actually started early enough to be successful in Vietnam and remain so up to today. It would be impossible. Vietnam is really one of the only countries in the world where you have a strong local number two to Google in both browser and search.
Vuan, question for you. Let's talk about the current business. US CEO, you're steering the business in the current climate. Clear number two in Vietnam.
Yep.
Percentages, I'm not sure exactly, but significant. How do you guys perceive that role here? How do you match up against a titan like Google? I mean, they don't even have an office here from what I understand, right? So you have some advantages
there. Well, that's
there.
Explicitly so.
Yeah. Explicitly so. Yeah. How you guys see the landscape today compared to 12 years ago when the chance to be number one was there?
I mean, we're here. Mm-hmm. We're strong number two. I guess we dream of being number one, but let's be realistic. I don't think it's actually possible, but what we think is it's really good to have a strong number two and to have competition because it just gives like more choice to users.
Yeah.
Actually, we think that, so Google was not paying attention, we launched and we became quickly successful. And we think that because of that, actually they start to pay attention and they invested more in localizing their products. Hence their product is, it's better for Vietnamese today, right? So we have some parts, we think we have some part in that. And moving forward, I think we want to keep the same dynamic. You know, of course, at the same time, it's, you know, it's very challenging to compete against Google. But at the same time, still this huge opportunity for us. We think if we keep focusing on, you know, needs of Vietnamese users, then we have a shot.
In the old days, Google would claim that we were a virus. They would try to...
Google would claim that?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
We were not allowed to have a advertising account in Google to advertise Kokok.
Wow.
In 2017, so relatively recently, we tried to buy advertising in YouTube and there was no way for us to do it.
Wow.
So competition is hard. And I think that it moved a little bit in that, I mean, that was silly in a sense, right? It was brutally silly. Mm. But today it's more devious in the sense that we have to fight against the defaults, right? So you buy a phone, you will get a browser. It will be a Chrome on Android, Safari on iOS. Mm-hmm. And we have the additional hurdle of people having to choose us, download us through the App Store that is owned by the company that we compete against.
Yeah.
Right, install us, make us default, which is only recently possible on iOS. Right, so we have to jump a lot of hoops. So it's quite amazing that we have the user numbers that we have with all of these hoops. And I think that at one point what's going to happen, it's happening in Europe, it happened in a big way in Russia, is that the government has to create a level playing field, as we call it. So if an app is installed by default, then the competitor app should be installed by default. There should be a choice screen for people to really choose. And everyone in Vietnam knows Kokok, so obviously our usership would even improve a lot, right? Because we don't have to make a name for ourselves. The name is there.
Let's talk about the user personas of Kokok for a little bit. Mm-hmm. So last numbers I've read from my notes, at least, we're talking about 10, 15 million monthly active users, correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah. Let's talk about where they're coming from. Who are these people? If Google is able to be on everyone's phone from the start, you know, how are you guys getting these users to go through all these hoops to download? Let's talk about that.
So I think just to give a picture of user numbers, so daily we have 60,000 installs on both desktop and mobile.
Every single day?
Every single day.
Okay. That's like 1.5 stadiums.
So if you look at Medin Stadium, which is one of the biggest stadiums in Vietnam, 40,000 seats, right? It's 1.5 Medin Stadium every day of installs.
New install.
Mm. And every day we have 4 million daily active users, right? So that's kind of 100 million stadiums. So there's a lot of users. So what I mean here is that, you know, on the one hand, it's a lot of users. On the other hand, if you look at the whole market, it's still a lot of opportunities to grow, right? But what's true is that when you ask about persona is that we already have a mass product. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be pretty representative of internet population of Vietnam. I think there's one characteristic, as JP said, is that users choose us. So we are not the default. And then, so users really, you know, have this mindset of, okay, I want to choose Kokok, and for whatever reason, right? And they know why, and then they stick around. So it's really kind of users that either through their friends or, you know, relatives. So someone told them you should use Kokok, and they decided to jump in, to choose us, and they're happy about us.
Do we see any sort of trend when it comes to where these users are coming from? Is it so? For example, I'll just paint a picture. One of our recent clients is a water brand, and in the north, this particular brand is synonymous with the word water bottle. So instead of saying water bottle, they say the brand. In this case, it's La Vie. They're highly dominant in the north. Yep. And when you go south, it's Aquafina. And so for them, they're obviously, they see a divergence in terms of how the brand is perceived. And do you see any sort of trends like that across not just geography, but age?
Not really. So, I mean, in terms of geography, pretty much representative of, you know, the whole population of Vietnam.
Okay. Yep.
So like 40% of our users come from top six cities and the rest, right? So it's kind of a good mix. I would say that we are still skewed to our younger people, right? But it's a slight kind of...
That's with any internet business, though.
But I think it's good, actually.
It's very good. It's very difficult to... Like really, when you get to these numbers, as Wang is saying, like, you know, if you fill 100 stadiums a day with your customers... And by the way, companies throw a lot of big numbers, right? But very often is, oh, I get one hit. I see these people for 1 second on a day. Not for us, right? On desktop, people load 70 pages per day in our browser. So these 4 million people load 70 pages.
Yeah.
On mobile, they do a little bit less, but it's still 30 pages, right? How long does it take you on your mobile to read 30 pages of internet, right? It will take hours. And so they spend that amount of time with us. So it's like watching, like, you know, 100 football games, each of our users. And when you reach that numbers, it's very difficult not to be representative of the whole internet population. And as Wang says, the only persona is the choice that these people made at one point. For whatever reason, I mean, some people because they're super smart and research and did a lot of things. Others because their friends told them.
Was there a breakthrough moment for the company? So if we look back in the last 12 years, obviously at the beginning you start with zero, you're not. What was that point that you saw you became a mass market product?
When we were unblocking Facebook in many, many moons ago, that we believed that the conversation that was occurring was, let's say in high school, some person would say, oh, I posted it on Facebook, have you seen it? And then they would say, oh no, the internet is down because the shark bit the cable, I forgot what kind, you know, there are these explanations. And then the friend would say, no, if you use Kokok, you can see it. Hmm. And then they would download and use Kokok and see the post. Then they would go to Chrome or Safari or whatever, or Edge, and not see it because the Facebook was blocked.
I see.
And then go back to Kokok and it worked. I think that was a key moment for people to realize that Kokok was doing these things for the Vietnamese people, very specifically for this market. And then they realize, and when I type, it corrects my my Vietnamese and it accentuates automatically. And I can download videos, which in a world without, you know, in those days, streaming was not a very efficient way to consume video. It was better to download and then watch because... Right. If you get interrupted or the internet quality is not that great, streaming is a very painful experience. And we were recognizing that and saying, like, download and then watch, because you will be uninterrupted. And so I think that was probably the key realization. A browser is not just a, you know, it's not all the same. Mm-hmm. You know, there are some people who do things that actually make my experience better. And we strive to do that still today. It's a bit more difficult because when your competitor pays attention, they obviously do that as well, right?
One question for you. We just looked at some of the milestones there. That there was breakthrough moments. What are the next breakthrough moments? Let's talk about innovation. You have your principal products and you're always building on top of that. Let's talk about the near future. Don't want to go too far ahead. Maybe in the next 1-2 years. What's in the product cycle that can get people excited and give them more reason to download and use Kokok?
So first of all, you know, at the core, I just want to reiterate what JP said, just focusing on users and then, you know, Vietnamese users and their need and try to, you know, make the experience better. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Web3 is coming. We are a web browser, so for sure we're going to do something with it, right? And I think it's coming pretty fast. You know, this year, most probably we will launch some crypto wallet. You know, we recognize that being the browser, we need to give users the tools, you know, to embrace Web3 in a convenient, safe, and practical way. So we want to do that. To be honest, you know, Web3, not everything is clear, right? But what's for sure is that it's coming, right? A lot of money is going into it. You know, there's ups and downs, especially now with cryptocurrencies are kind of down big time, right? But I think blockchain, NFTs, cryptocurrencies, they're here for good. We're not going to build all those use cases, but we're going to give the tools to our users to, you know, to access to all those services. That's something, kind of big for Kokok that's coming this year.
I imagine I'm on the browser and you have a little plugin, whatever you
can. Yeah, so I think our strength has been always kind of make it easy to users to integrate all that they need, all that Vietnamese user need into our browser. And they don't need to go and look for an extension, find out how it works, if it's real, not real, if the extension is dangerous or not. So we just package everything.
Okay.
Yeah, they can access, Web3 apps, basically.
Yeah. And just like in Web 1, it's not our job to build websites. We build a browser that shows all the websites. And in Web3, our job is not to build these distributed apps or games or whatever, but our job will be to provide a safe platform for the user to immediately access these things without having to jump through 17 hoops. Mm-hmm. We'll work with these developers to make sure that we are ultra compatible with whatever they're building. And I want to reiterate the innovation that Wang says. It's not very glamorous, but we have to keep looking at the top 1,000 websites that people use in Vietnam, and we have to make sure that our browser is always better than Chrome and Safari, whatever that means, right? If there's too many ads, we make it a bit faster. If there's too many trackers, which makes it slow, and we remove them. If the site is broken in some way, we'll try to help fix it. If you have a video, you can download it because it's still a thing for many people.
Have you done that with Vietcetera?
You mean trying to optimize you? I can guarantee you that your site is faster on Kokok. No, we have to because it's the thing that will kill us if we don't do it right. And if we do it right, it will make us huge. Because if you use a browser and it feels faster, it just works. And then you go to another browser and one of the 100 pages you do every day breaks. you know, how are you going to make that choice, right?
Right.
And so all innovation is very much somehow behind
just
behind the scene
and
just making sure that everything works just a little bit better.
Let's talk about your customers, not just, you know, you have two customers, right? You have the people using it and you have the brands.
Yep.
I assume that's a big revenue driver for you guys. Who are these top clients and why do they continue to adopt Coq over all these other solutions?
First of all, like for our users, I think we have like quite big customer base, right? So across the board, of course we have big and small, right? So all the big names that you would expect are there. So e-commerce, right? We have all the big names like Shopee, right? We have all the big brands like FMCG. So Pepsi, we have Vietnam Airlines, we have. So it's also quite representative of the whole landscape in terms of advertising. Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course, smaller, they spend less. Mm-hmm. But so we have search advertising, display advertising, like Google does. So it's pretty similar.
How is the solution different from Google? Is it purely the localization element?
I think, so where we can customize, we will custom, right? In the browser, we have a pretty unique format in the new tab in terms of advertising, and we can do pretty cool stuff. So we can do interactive ads, right? So even kind of games for advertisers. So we can get very creative. I think the hard part for us, of course, we don't have market share of Google, right? So Google is like is default choice. If you want to do digital advertising, of course you go to Google and Facebook. So, but for us is make sure that they also think about Coq. I think local people, they definitely think about Coq, but you know, when the decision-making process goes to regional, then we need to influence that process.
Yeah.
Also, we need to make sure that kind of we play to our strengths. So really make advertisers understand that, okay, we can do something slightly different, you know, and it will stand out. It will be more creative. It will be more interactive. Yeah, we have the team on the ground. And you know, at our size, we can customize pretty quickly. Google, Facebook, you know, they're going to do products, advertising products for the world, right? So they're not going to be able to do what we do.
Are there any other search browsers in Vietnam?
No.
Is it just Google and Coq? It's very much a...
Well,
democracy.
I mean, on the browsing landscape, you can, you separate the platforms, right? So Microsoft as still a distribution via Windows, surprisingly small, like crazy small compared to us. You have iOS with Safari, you have Android with Chrome, and you have the special Android coming from Samsung with the Samsung browser, which is really, you know, sort of a Chromium thing. These are our competitors, but all of our competitors are distributed, right? So we are in this weird position that there's always something that you need to replace with Coq.
Yep.
And that something is working pretty good, which also means that we need to be better always. And it has the massive power of distribution, right? So why does Google pay $18 billion worldwide to Apple to put Google search into Safari? The answer is because they need to. Right? Because if they didn't, people would start using things like Coq, or you would be a lot more competitive, let's say. Or we could have an agreement with Apple in Vietnam, and Google probably pays, I would imagine, I don't know how big Vietnam is towards the global economy, but I wouldn't be surprised if Google pays more than 10 times our revenue in Vietnam in order for us not to be on Apple, right? So it's crazy.
Do you guys pay for distribution? I mean, you mentioned like you try to do YouTube ads.
We would love to, but it's
fenced off.
It's been very challenging to nearly impossible.
Yeah.
So we cannot do distribution the way Google does it simply because they've monopolized the channels globally. So we do not have any phone deals. We can't. We've talked to all of them and they just can't do it. It's not that they say no, they would love to do it, but they say, but I have a Google deal.
The global level.
A global level. And Vietnam is not mentioned, but I cannot carve it out. And they can certainly not have two of them. So it's a global sort of antitrust thing that we believe is going to be shaken up in the next 5 to 10 years for sure. And we need to be definitely ready to take advantage when it comes. Because I think that frankly, Vietnamese users deserve to have a phone with, you know, the Kokok browser alongside Safari, and then make their own choice and probably use both for different use cases, by the way, totally reasonable.
Let's talk about the use case a little bit. Kokok, you can't search English on there, for instance, right?
Correct. Well, you can.
You can.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
You can.
Yeah.
Okay. But almost 99% of the searches are in Vietnamese.
Yeah, sure, of course.
Like, if I was a user on the two searches, in what ways are the results shown differently? I mean, I know that's a very broad statement, but let's say I was asking a general query, like, what's the top song in Vietnam today? Like,
maybe we have to, because people don't think about search totally correctly, right? Mm. The search is a bit like the steering wheel of the browser, right? You tell the machine what you want to see because you know that it exists, right? You need the address of a restaurant, or you need to see a video of some sort, or you need whatever. So you it's like a steering wheel. Mm. And for most of these queries, we know at least as good as Google. And this is like 85% of all queries sort of are directional that way, right? And if we have any advantages, that we will simply have more local knowledge about what's up. So to take your example of songs, I mean, that's a pretty trivial query for us. And I expect no real difference between Kokok or Google. And if the more local it is, the more we have maybe a slight advantage. Mm-hmm. But don't forget, Google really pays attention. Mm-hmm. And when you go more towards international, I would say that the advantage of Google gets bigger and bigger. But it's not that significant, unless you are, you know, like yourself, like cosmopolitan, and you expect, like, I don't know, you would search for something very specific in the US, but that's not a use case that is representative of the market in any way, shape, or form. And when it comes to the browser, is just slightly different things that makes us better.
I have another question about the past leadership and history of Kokok. It's been in the media for many years. Let's talk about the ex-founding team a bit. You know, you mentioned there's a couple of Vietnamese engineers, a few Russian engineers, I suppose, too. The former CEO, I forget his name, actually.
Victor.
Yeah. Victor, yeah. He left the business a number of years ago. Yeah. JP, it sounds like you kind of took on the role after he left. Uh-huh. Tell us about that history a little bit. And
I mean, like, just picking up back on what I said earlier, right? There were these three Vietnamese founders, I would call them, because they really had the idea, etc. They brought along Victor, who was the CEO of and the founder of the Russian company, and became the CEO of the Vietnamese company as well, and a bunch of Russian engineers. Two of the Vietnamese founders left relatively quickly, meaning before my time. Mm-hmm. So when I came in at 2015 officially, they were already gone. Tang, the remaining, left in 2018, if I remember correctly. You know, as company grows, you know, if you are a founder, and that applies to nearly all of them except some of the engineers who actually are still around, not the Vietnamese one, you tend to be a bit of a maverick. I think you have to be a bit of a maverick to come from your home country to Vietnam and start a search engine. And so your optimal way of operating is within a smaller group of similar-minded mavericks and try to break everything and make it, you know, different. And as the company grows, and now we are nearly 400 people, it becomes much, much more boring, maybe, you know, to run a company and make sure that...
As a maverick.
Because you have the responsibility for 20 million plus users. You have the responsibility for thousands of customers. Mm-hmm. You have the responsibility for hundreds of employees. Mm-hmm. You can't do it the same way that you do it when you have zero users, you know, lots of money because people believe in you.
And a professional CEO.
Yes, so all of that definitely played a role in these people not feeling necessarily at home anymore and then leaving at different times, right? It's really staggered.
Let's talk about the team culture a little bit too. Of a company of 400 people with a legacy of Russian, European people, Vietnamese, now French, and whoever else is at the company. What is the dominant language? Let's just start there. I'm imagining like people translating all the time. I mean, Vietnamese, I'm sure, is the number one, but
it's still a Vietnamese company. I mentioned that, you know, when I first moved to Vietnam, I joined Techcombank, which is a local bank, Vietnamese bank. And they have this, you know, they're kind of international because they have some expats. But I think it has kind of same feel. Mm-hmm. And I really love it. So the two startups that I did, the fintech startups, were, you know, running by, you know, foreign teams. Yeah, you didn't have that local kind of feel. And I think here it really feels Vietnamese. Actually, you're, you know, we just moved, but our previous office in Hanoi was in the same building as Sở Thông Tin, which is very Vietnamese. That's kind of the physical feel, but the actual the culture, I think, is the same. And so that's the one. Second one, I think it's very a culture of kind of engineers still. A lot of people have engineering background. But now a lot of people are not engineers. But I guess we kept the culture, which is, you know, very straightforward kind of can-do attitude. Mm-hmm. We still have kind of this culture of, it's not really maverick, but, you know, it's just the idea that, yeah, we can do anything.
You guys are the challenger.
Yeah, so we are the challenger. We can do anything. Of course, we need to find our own ways, because we're not going to compete against Google, especially Google search, with the resource that they have, you know, compared to what we have. So we need to find our own ways. But yeah, I think we really have a lot of talented people who are ready to, you know, to fight. You know, team is like almost 400 people, but the organization is very flat. I manage some of the product managers, some of the team leaders, software engineers, right? So it's very flat, and try to make teamwork, you know, function. I think it's really interesting culture, you know, really believing that, you know, we need to find our own ways, but can definitely make it. So just one example, when I joined, and it was a bit crazy, we were still doing our own health insurance. So someone in the company wrote the health insurance policy and said, yes, and the process, and said, hey, every employee, if you go to hospital, this is the process, and the company will pay, reimburse you.
Yeah.
This is crazy, right? Because it's very risky, actually. So now, we're going with like normal health insurance for the employees. But just to give you, but I think you need to be a bit crazy to, you know, to come to Vietnam and say, yeah, I'm going to do search engine. I'm going to do a browser, because actually it's really hard. But yeah, I think it's really interesting. So we have those people are really good. Try to have them focus on users, because it's not just about engineering challenge, right? At the end, we want to make better products for users.
Headquarters for Kokok is in Hanoi. You have an office here in Saigon as well. I'm assuming you're still hiring across different roles.
Yeah. So, I mean, historically, we're based in Hanoi, but... Now we have an office in Ho Chi Minh City, I think. So we try to, in the long term, we try to rebalance. I think the idea is very simple. Is we need to be where talent is, right? So for now, I think maybe 2/3 of our engineers are in Hanoi, right? But there's a lot of talents in Ho Chi Minh City. So, of course, we should have engineers in Ho Chi Minh City. And you know, the experience with COVID and everything is working, you know, in different locations, remotely, at home, we can make it work.
Well, we're nearing the end of today's podcast and episode. It's been a pleasure having the two of you share more about Kokok and its challenger role here in Vietnam. Yes. Maybe start with JP. Do you have any final, you know, sharings that you'd like to give out there to our audience today?
Well, I mean, if you're Vietnamese, please give Kokok another try for sure, if you don't use it already. And it's very important to have competition. I think people underestimate a little bit, you know, from just
become
the perspective
of
convenience of saying, ah, we, you know, I built a search engine and browser in Germany that became Brave in the US. And people were telling me, but we already have one. And I'm like, great. So imagine that in 1920 or whenever that case was, someone would have come to competitors of Ford and said, but there's already a car. Like, who needs another one? You do. You really do. Right? Because that's the only way that you're going to get innovation in the space that is super important. I mean, you use these products all day long, right? And we play that little role in Vietnam, and it would be nice if more people would play that role worldwide. And I play a little bit of my part in Brave in the US coming up, etc. But it's way too little. Right. And as a user, that means that at least some part of you should support that, you know, download the browser, use it, try to create your own use case. Most of our users use Kokok as a default, but you know, it's reasonable to have different browser for different use case. Right. I suggest you use Google Chrome for the Google apps and then us for the rest.
Got it. Well, thank you so much, JP, for your sharing there. Vuan, coming from the CEO, what do you have to share about Kokok, your team, anything?
Like JP said, be curious about Kokok. Mm. Be curious as a user, right? We're also on the ground, and so we want to listen to users, even, you know, some positive feedback, negative feedback. Mm. You know, if you're interested about Kokok as an employee, I mean, working for Kokok, then definitely reach out. We are hiring across the board. We need talented people. I think the bar is quite high because what we do is definitely hard, right? But I mean, to me, it's exciting. Mm. Like I said, if we do our job well, then we can have a huge impact, right? So I work in fintech where we were basically burning money to get our first 100,000 users. And here we have millions. You know, and then like JP said, we have millions of users that loads like 70 pages a day. Mm-hmm. So a lot of, touch points and opportunity to, you know, to help users.
You guys are profitable as well.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a bonus. So we're profitable.
Yes, yes.
No, if you want to work at a profitable company, look no further than Kokok.
Exactly. And after the impact, I think yesterday I had a conversation with a candidate and I told her, because she was a bit hesitant and was comparing different things. And I said, like, look at all of the opportunities you have and calculate how many users will be. She's a UX writer, mm-hmm. like writing, right? I said, like, think about what you write and how many people will see it. Mm-hmm. And then compare that to what you do at Kokok by writing one sentence that is seen by 100 stadiums of people every day, 70 times if it's in the browser, right? Mm-hmm. And when we interview, often you have people that come up and they've done 10 projects, but even adding them all together is not 1% of the impact that they will have. Mm. So that's a big thing for sure.
Okay.
That raises the bar a lot too.
Well, thank you so much to our dear audience. Thank you so much for tuning in for another episode and Vietnam Innovators as always. Today's episode with JP Schmetz, the chairman of Kokok, and also Vuan Nguyen, the CEO of Kokok. Thank you for being on the show, guys. And for those listening in, I'll see you next week. Take care. Bye-bye. Viglacera Corporation is the largest real estate and building materials group in Vietnam, as well as the largest industrial park operator in Vietnam. 48 years of excellence makes Viglacera a leading full-service provider of sustainable and high-quality building materials. Having a total of 40 subsidiaries, Viglacera covers the entire real estate and building materials spectrum. You can also check out the video version of this podcast on our other platforms such as YouTube and Facebook. New episodes are out every week, so don't forget to subscribe to Vietcetera's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube channel for more interesting content.